trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there and welcome to the show. You know, I feel like I need to warn you right up front. I need to caution you. I'm the kind of guy who crosses state lines. You know, typically it's just to visit family, but, you know, since that seems to be a big deal these days, I do. I cross state lines on a pretty regular basis, and I've actually been to the Four Corners area and, you know, crossed four of them at once. So, you know, you can make whatever judgments you want about me, but I felt like I needed to put that out there just in the interest of full disclosure. Yeah, I'm one of those people. You know, there ought to be a law. There just should be a law about that kind of stuff. All right, sarcasm off. Welcome to the show. Glad you could join us today. This program exists not to tell you what to think, nor berate you if you think something a little differently than I think, but more to encourage you to be clear and independent in your thinking, to realize that there's a battle for your mind, and you are the one who needs to plant the flag and claim your mind as sovereign territory and own your own worldview. So to that end, I'm going to share with you some of the best information that I've been able to find. I spend pretty much every spare hour of my day trying to find good, informative sources, an informed take, a principled take on whatever it is that's going on in the world. And it's a good thing there's a lot of stuff going on in the world, so I share that with you, and then you do with that information as you will. It's up to you to make up your mind. But bottom line is, I am here to provide resources for wrong thinkers, so I invite you to pull up a chair, find courage and camaraderie among your fellow wrong thinkers, and claim your rights as a free individual. Now, I'm helped in this quest by great sponsors like MonticelloCollege.org, LifesavingFood.com, the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George, HSLAmmo.com, Sewing and Quilting Center, also in St. George, Utah, GovernYourIncome.com, and SolarPatriots.com. You can just click on any of the links I provide in my show notes, and I do my show notes every single day that I do a show. So let's jump right in here. the very pleasant surprise last Friday was that Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted on all charges against him. Now, before this starts sounding too much like, you know, chest bumps and high fives and, yeah, you know, take it to the commies for mommy, you know, kind of stuff, I'm very grateful that justice prevailed here. And I think justice did prevail. I think that the jurors were unanimous in refusing to convict him on any of the counts that were thrown at him. There was a lot of stuff thrown at him that was pretty questionable. A couple of the counts actually dismissed once the case had begun. But I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the events that ended two human lives and left permanent scarring and permanent psychological marks on another, as well as on Kyle himself, I'm not going to pretend like, hey, this was a great thing and this is, you know, this is worthy of hoisting beers and singing songs together about it. I'm grateful that a young man will not be spending the rest of his life in prison, but I don't think we need to minimize the fact that there's ample tragedy in this. Even if the people who were attacking him, you know, I know there's a sense of, well, they deserved what they got. And they likely did. I mean, the jury agreed. He was justified in doing what he did. But it's still a tragedy. And 17 years old, I mean, you've got a long life ahead of you. That's a heavy burden to be carrying with you. So I hope that I hope for his sake that that he can start to heal. I think he probably has a lot of years of pain and who knows, probably therapy ahead of him having to deal with this. So let's not get carried away with celebration. Let's not overdose on Schadenfreude, because as satisfying as it was to see that a person does not have a duty to just stand there and let the lawless mob tear you to pieces, it's tragic. Even when people engaged in bad activities are killed, there's an element of tragedy here. And if we too readily embrace that as, you know, a cause for celebration, I think we're on a path that that leads to some pretty dark places. You can justify a lot of things when you stop looking at people as humans and see them as somehow less than human and therefore less deserving, you know, of God's love, less deserving of, you know, their basic rights. Now, unfortunately for Kyle's attackers, they forfeited many of those rights when they started to go after him in such a way as to reasonably cause him to believe that he was going to die or be beaten to a cripple if he didn't protect himself. So let me start on a grateful note. Yes, I'm very thankful to see that that Kyle Rittenhouse is a free individual. Here's the disturbing part, though, and this is, okay, there's a mixed blessing here. I'm shocked, and in fact, I'm a little bit stunned at how many people, at least within the media, celebrities, and so forth, appear to be so detached from reality that they are surprised at the verdict. I mean, it's pretty clear. You can tell people who actually watched the case and who followed it closely and paid attention to what the prosecution was showing. I mean, like it or not, Kyle Rittenhouse owes Gage Grosskreutz a little bit of a debt of gratitude. Because I think if Grosskreutz had been shot dead, as Anthony Huber and Joseph, I'm trying to remember his name, sorry, the guy who set it all in motion, Rosenbaum, thank you. If Grosskreutz had been shot dead like the other two, he would not have been sitting on that witness stand and he would not have made the case, the ironclad case that I was only shot after I pointed my pistol at Kyle Rittenhouse. I really believe that was the turning point. That was when it was clearly established that, okay, Kyle wasn't just running around randomly shooting people, but there's this narrative out there that's saying things like, well, you know, he crossed state lines. Like, suddenly that matters. You know, wow, he crossed state lines? Oh, yeah, there's a whole bunch of different lies about Kyle Rittenhouse. We're going to spend a little bit of time debunking a few of those. But what about those people who were shocked at the verdict? What about the ones, I mean, come on, Saturday Night Live did, you know, just full-on communist agitprop, you know, to try to cope with it. There's Jesse Jackson standing up there in Chicago saying, the only cure here is a communist revolution. And so there's some people that are seriously losing what little grasp they had of reality. How could they have been so misled? And I'm afraid I'm looking at the media on this one, the mass media. And I'm thinking, they failed. And they failed hard. And this may sound a little bit vindictive, but I'm going to go ahead and put it out there. You know, Nicholas Sandman, the Covington High School kid who was so ruthlessly slandered by CNN and other media outlets for a pro-life demonstration that was taking place at the Lincoln Memorial a couple of years ago. You remember this? The most punchable face kid? The kid wearing the MAGA hat? Oh, man, they were so sure this kid is a racist because he supports Trump and blah, blah, blah. Well, Nicholas Sandman and his attorneys took these media outlets to task, and the exact amount of money that he was paid is supposedly secret. But it's also pretty well understood. It was upwards of $250 million. That ended up in his hands. I think Kyle Rittenhouse may be due for an even bigger payout by these same media outlets. And we'll go into some detail as to why that is. Why couldn't the press accurately report the facts of his case? And you probably already know the answer, right? Because there's a narrative. Well, you know, this was a Black Lives Matter protest, and these mostly peaceful protesters, why, he just went there because he wanted to kill them. But is that really the case? The jury sure didn't see that. Kind of makes you wonder if the media is in some way trying to foment division, trying to exacerbate racial tension. Okay, maybe I'm to the point where I no longer wonder. I think they're definitely doing that. I know they're trying to get people at one another's throats. And I think it's reprehensible that they would do this. When we come back from the break, got a great essay from Jesse Singal that explains how the people who are shocked at the verdict and their disconnect from reality can be traced directly to all the ways that the media failed. And by the way, if you haven't seen CNN's reporting after Kyle's acquittal, oh my goodness. Their general counsel must have been telling them, hey, you've got to get your reporters out there. You got to make sure that these people are talking about how hey, there's knowledge that was previously not known to the public. By the way, I'm calling BS on that one. It was known to the public, at least for those who were willing to set aside their agenda and look at the facts. We'll take the media to task. This is going to be a fun trip to the woodshed. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Quick shout out here to lifesavingfood.com. You can go to their website link in my show notes. It's also right there in my sponsor section of my website at thebrianhydeshow.com. Bottom line, you're looking to stock up on some food storage? Smart move. Now, I'd like to save you 25% on whatever you order through lifesavingfood.com. All you do is enter my last name, Hyde, H-Y-D-E, as your coupon code, 25% discount. That's just for my listeners, and that is a better discount than you can get if you went to ReadyWise themselves. So a tip of the hat to my good friend Kendall Whiting, who is the owner of lifesavingfood.com. It's a great time to make some of those preps. They also make good food, Christmas presents. Oh, I know. You roll your eyes. How would I feel if someone gave me food storage? But you know what? This year, I think I'd actually feel pretty good about it. So consider it. Let's talk about the disconnect. The Rittenhouse verdict shouldn't have been a surprise. Now, Jesse Singal is no fan of Kyle Rittenhouse. He says Rittenhouse was no hero, but he says the failure of the media helps explain why so many people expected him to be convicted. Jesse Singal says a lot of people are surprised that Kyle Rittenhouse, the young man who shot three people in Kenosha, Wisconsin last year, killing two of them, was just found not guilty on all charges, including on two counts of homicide. And the furious responses are pouring in right after the verdict came down. Murderer! White privilege! America! Ka-ka. Yes. They all began trending on Twitter. MSNBC quickly published a piece titled, Kyle Rittenhouse Trial Was Designed to Protect White Conservatives Who Kill. A number of very high-profile figures, ranging from New York Mayor Bill de Blasio to Wajahat Ali of the Daily Beast, expressed similar sentiments immediately after the verdict on Twitter. Now, to these observers, Rittenhouse's acquittal on all charges confirms what they already knew about our justice system. It's a grotesque machine that will forever forgive white supremacist violence. From their perspective, Rittenhouse clearly killed two people illegally, and it's baffling that he got away with it. But Jesse Singal says for those who've watched this case closely since that terrible night in Kenosha, this isn't a surprising result. The large amount of video footage available since almost the very start of this controversy revealed that Rittenhouse always had at least a decent self-defense claim and potentially quite a strong one. The fact that so many people were so confused about the facts of this case, not only on the self-defense question, but on basic matters like whether the people he shot were black or white, whether he took his rifle across state lines, or whether he had pre-existing family or social ties to Kenosha, suggests that despite all the understandable talk of the right's fake news problem, partisan news coverage and punditry on the left is becoming a serious problem in its own right. Rittenhouse says he decided to take part in helping to protect and clean up Kenosha after watching the wave of destruction that hit the city following the police shooting of a black man named Jacob Blake. Videos of him at various points during his day there showed he helped clean graffiti off of a school, interacted with protesters peacefully, and asked them if they needed medical assistance. He apparently had some rudimentary first aid training as a lifeguard, but contrary to what he told someone filming him at one point, was not an EMT. And he took part in guarding various businesses, all while toting an AR-15-style rifle. It was an AR-15. You can just call it that, okay? Then darkness fell and things turned catastrophic. The violence appears to have been sparked by Joseph Rosenbaum, a deeply disturbed man with a tragic history who'd just been released from a hospital following a suicide attempt, who witnesses said had threatened to kill Rittenhouse earlier in the day, and who could be seen in one video seeking to provoke a group of armed protesters by yelling, "Shoot me, nigga," repeatedly. Rittenhouse testified that Rosenbaum ambushed him, and that appears to be borne out by the videos. Rosenbaum chases him a significant distance. Rittenhouse, now hemmed in by parked cars and lacking an easy escape, only shoots Rosenbaum after he lunges at him. Now, most of this was clear from the video that went online shortly after news of the killings went viral. But more recently released drone footage shows those final moments with greater clarity than before. Rosenbaum really was reaching for Rittenhouse or his rifle at the moment he was shot. The other two men Rittenhouse shot chased him after they and others in the crowd realized he'd shot someone. Video shows that Anthony Huber, who was killed, caught up with Rittenhouse and struck him with a skateboard. Gage Grosskreutz, who survived and testified during the trial, acknowledged in a devastating moment for the prosecution that at the moment Rittenhouse shot him in the arm, he was pointing his own handgun at the teenager. Now, according to Wisconsin state law, lethal force is only legally permissible if someone reasonably believes that such force is necessary to prevent imminent death or great bodily harm to himself or herself. Even if a defendant provokes a confrontation, they're still allowed to resort to deadly force if those criteria are met and they've exhausted any other reasonable means of escape. Little else matters, really. Not the politics of the case. Not whether Huber or Grosskreutz thought they were chasing someone who had just killed someone in cold blood, which they may well have been. Although, I have to say, given that it was a riot, and given that we have seen that kind of behavior elsewhere, I'd be a little more skeptical. Oh, they just had the boldest motives. No, they were part of a mob. And what mobs do is they turn off their thinking and they become very animalistic. So, you know, that's my take, but for what it's worth, there you have it. Now, the author here says many observers, myself included, thought Rittenhouse couldn't legally carry the AR-15 rifle he used in the shootings. This would only have been a misdemeanor violation anyway, with a maximum sentence of 9 months, but it turned out to be a moot point. The judge tossed the charge because that law applies to minors armed with rifles or shotguns only if those weapons are short-barreled, as U.S. News puts it. So whatever one thinks about these laws, they are the relevant laws here. And they made for an uphill battle for the prosecution all along because the video showed that Rittenhouse was, in fact, threatened by the people he shot. Now, the videos alone didn't prove that a self-defense claim would definitely prevail, of course. But they did come pretty close to proving. Rittenhouse did not instigate any of the shootings in question. All of this was right there on video and in the relevant statutes for anyone with eyes to see. So the question is, why did so many people, including influential people who are paid to get the news right, why did they look away? Jesse Singel says, I first wrote about the case in a pair of newsletter posts not long after it happened. I was astounded at the distance between what was on the video and what news outlets were saying. First, he allegedly killed a protester by shooting him in the head, is how Tess Owen described the violence in Vice on August 27th of last year. Writing in Slate, Mark Joseph Stern wrote that Rittenhouse placed himself at the center of the violence and then escalated it by shooting a man in the head. Countless other journalists and online personalities treated the case similarly. Even some elected officials got in on the act. Rittenhouse was quickly and publicly labeled a white supremacist domestic terrorist by Representative Ayanna Pressley on Twitter. And after Rittenhouse was released on $2 million bail, an amount raised by supporters, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez weighed in, does anyone believe Rittenhouse would be released if he were Muslim and did the same thing in a different context? For people who say systemic racism doesn't exist, this is what it looks like. Protection of white supremacy baked deep into our carceral systems. Now, this endless invocation of white supremacy as an explanatory factor in this controversy was strange, given that all three people Rittenhouse shot were white, and given that, contra Presley's claim, no evidence ever emerged that he had any connection to white supremacists. Presley was actually recently asked by Fox News in an admittedly leading email if she still stood by the comments, and she didn't respond. After the case went viral, Rittenhouse was embraced as a right-wing cause celeb and photographed with members of some of the Proud Boys at a bar, but there's no evidence he had any prior connection to that or any other radical group. Vice and Slate were far from the only outlets that contorted the facts of the case or published truly dishonest analysis. In fact, Intercept columnist Natasha Leonard wrote that Rittenhouse chose to travel to Kenosha, Wisconsin, and hunt down anti-racist protesters with an assault rifle. An astonishingly misleading description of the actual chain of events. We're going to come back to this in just a few moments, but, you might want to take some blood pressure medication as we go through some of the more egregious lies told by the media. Not to worry, though, we'll debunk them. And have a couple other thoughts on this matter as well.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
All right, welcome back to the show. So, yeah, Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted. The media and many people who apparently follow and believe the narrative that was put forth by the media were shocked. And there's still just some blatant, how can you go out there and just kill people and get away with it? There's absolutely no acknowledgement of the responsibility that belongs to the people who chose to be out there rioting in the first place. I love how Tom Woods puts it. He goes, oh, just this group of fine Americans was having a perfectly good riot, and here came Kyle Rittenhouse and ruined it by showing up to stand up for this community. And it kind of raises an interesting question about at what point would you and I be justified? And this is an individual answer, by the way. It's not like there's a blanket way to approach this, but when would we be justified to stand up and protect our community? I mean, the police clearly had stood down. They clearly were not doing anything to stop the destruction of property and the rioting that was going on. I mean, I can't tell you with, exactness, well, I know it would be this threshold here. But the more I think about it, the more I realize there is a point where I think I would feel it was my duty to stand up. And that doesn't mean go kill anybody who I don't like. That just means to stand up and, clean graffiti, to protect innocent life or the property of people who, otherwise aren't being represented through the tax dollars they're paying, for the government to protect them like it's supposed to do. Let's come back to the article here. Again, this is from Jesse Sengal, who says, other progressive writers expressed outrage that when Kyle Rittenhouse took the stand, he began sobbing. Jamil Smith wrote in Vox, it isn't simply that a killer cried about his own fear rather than the lives he took. It represented the exercise of entitlement, the enduring perception of the youth of white men and boys who commit illegal acts. Now, of course, the fact that Rittenhouse also cried and vomited when he turned himself into police suggests that there's at least a chance he was actually traumatized by what happened. But telling readers about that prior incident would complicate the narrative that he is an embodiment of entitled white evil. Every step of the way, a subset of journalists and commentators have done everything they could to paint Rittenhouse in as negative a light as possible, even when doing so has involved distortion or selective forgetting. Take the endlessly regurgitated claim, well, he crossed state lines to get to Kenosha. First of all, this is geographically trivial. Rittenhouse lived with his mother in Antioch, Illinois at the time. Antioch borders Wisconsin, meaning Antioch residents can cross state lines to grab a cup of coffee. Second, the point of that language is to make the gun charge sound more serious, to portray Rittenhouse as an outsider seeking carnage or both, but all of this was debunked months ago. He didn't bring his rifle across state lines, full stop. A friend bought it for him and kept it at his friend's stepfather's house in Kenosha. And those few journalists who did deep reporting into the case, Charles Homans of the New York Times Magazine and Paige Williams of the New Yorker, both deserve plaudits for their work. They quickly established Rittenhouse had many ties to Kenosha, where he worked as a lifeguard, where his father, grandmother, aunt, uncle, and a cousin all lived. But see, the overall effect of all this bad journalism and irresponsible, inflammatory punditry was the creation of an entirely separate version of events that bore almost no resemblance to what really happened that awful night in Kenosha. It was fake news, in the same sense progressives use that term, the creation of alternative realities as a result of partisan outlets and journalists more interested in narrative promotion and ideological point scoring than fact-checking. And of course, these false and distorted ideas about the Rittenhouse case didn't emerge fully formed from a vacuum. For a very long time, American authorities at every level really did look the other way in the face of vigilante right-wing violence. Now, you have to go back a long ways to get this, right? Reconstruction failed in large part because federal authorities would not protect black Americans from a terrifying onslaught of white violence in the South. And the much more recent racial reckoning that followed George Floyd's murder led many Americans to become more attuned to the possibility of racism lurking within everyday interactions, especially those involving law enforcement. So Jesse Singal says it's understandable how to the casual onlooker, all these viral claims about Rittenhouse being a white supremacist who went out looking for trouble might feel true, might feel like the kind of thing that could happen in America. Now, whether we should fit the Rittenhouse case into that pre-existing historical mold is a separate question, and all the available evidence suggests it would be foolhardy to do so. And think about the consequences of this misunderstanding. Millions of people having false ideas about Kyle Rittenhouse, what he did, and the justice system's treatment of him. It will surely increase the probability of post-trial violence, for one thing, because people will be surprised that such an obvious case of murder was acquitted. Obvious, by the way, in quotation marks. And even if that outcome is averted, this result will be taken as more proof that the system is beyond redemption. This sense of nihilistic hopelessness, that justice for Jacob Blake would be impossible through judicial channels, is part of the reason that Kenosha burned in the first place. And it's terrible to think of the consequence of this belief spreading further. And Jesse Singal says the misinformation's also had a pernicious effect on conservatives. It's been clear to many of them early on that the media wasn't treating this case fairly, and that to get a more accurate version of the story, they would have to turn to alternative news sources. Now, he says many of those sources are right-wing and not particularly concerned with truthfulness either. They tended to portray Rittenhouse as some sort of bona fide American hero, when we obviously shouldn't be encouraging 17-year-olds to embrace the roles of paramilitary foot soldiers. Okay, this is where I'm going to have to part company with agreeing with Mr. Singal. He didn't go there to act as a paramilitary foot soldier. He was well within his natural rights to be within Kenosha, to be there offering aid. He was within his natural right to be armed, and he was definitely within his natural right to defend himself. So let's not pretend, well, you know, the situation got worse because Kyle showed up. It was bad enough that a 17-year-old felt he had to show up along with other volunteers rather than just sit there and let it spiral out of control. Now, I do agree with Jesse Singal that if you continue to drive conservative Americans away from mainstream outlets, it's just going to exacerbate our national divide and the problems that come from it. From conservative belief in conspiracy theories. By the way, how come it's only conservatives, right? I think some of the biggest conspiracy theories have been from the left involving Kyle. But, you know, theories like QAnon or Stop the Steal. Oh, is that just a theory people really don't distrust? To the increasing distrust, fear, and hatred that Americans have of the other political party. Now, even if we can understand where this false narrative about Kyle Rittenhouse came from, he says we should not excuse this sort of fake news. Thank you. The mainstream media has a responsibility to report facts honestly, whether or not they line up with pre-existing narratives or ideological priors. If they fail to do so, their actions will only drive America further down its present dangerous path. So, I don't even agree totally with everything Jesse Singal says, but I do agree with the conclusion that the media's handling of this was reprehensible. In fact, I try to ascribe good motives to pretty much anything anybody does. Even if somebody cuts me off in traffic, I think, man, that person must really have to pee or something. I don't know. They're in a hurry for some reason. Maybe their wife is giving birth. I don't know. But I try to give, you know, some sort of noble motive to what they're doing. I can't. At least not with the way that Kyle Rittenhouse was so demonized. And I'm including in my show notes, I won't go into this here, but Miranda Devine has a very handy debunking of the 10 most heinous lies about Kyle Rittenhouse that were being shamelessly promoted by the American press. Now, there is a silver lining here, and I would be remiss if I didn't point this out. The lies were so shameless and so blatant that there are a number of people on the left who said, oh my goodness, I've been duped. How is it that I did not know, you know, that Kyle was putting out a dumpster fire, literally a dumpster fire? How did I know, you know, that he had family ties? How did I not know he had family ties in Kenosha? That he didn't transport the rifle across state lines? That he wasn't forbidden by law to possess the rifle? How did I not know these things? And they're realizing it's because the legacy press lied through their teeth and misrepresented the facts deliberately. They got red-pilled. And they got red-pilled pretty hard. Now, I'm not saying that with some kind of, you know, ha-ha, serves them right. I'm like, good for them. Because to get red-pilled, you have to have a degree of intellectual honesty to admit, oh my word, I was totally wrong about that, or I've been misled on that. And that's where the pursuit of truth begins. Starts with admitting where you are and then working your way towards that sunlight. So let's be grateful for small favors. And that is a small favor. Again, check out the show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. You'll find both of the articles referenced linked here. We'll be back in just a few moments.
This is The Brian Hyde Show. This is The Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Quick shout out here to the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage in St. George, Utah. These are the folks I would recommend you talk to if you are purchasing a home anywhere in the state of Utah. Heather has the experience, and I'm talking decades of experience, and the clout to help you get the loan you need without delay. Doesn't matter if it's a VA loan, to a traditional loan, to a reverse mortgage, even a refinance. Talk to the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage by calling 435-703-4522. Heather's NMLS ID is 715386. Patriot Home Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender, and you can visit their offices in St. George, Utah at 619 South Bluff Street. All right, let's talk about the failure of democracy. Paul Rosenberg always can be counted on for an insightful, informative take on current events. He's got kind of a down and dirty take, and this is not just on the Kyle Rittenhouse case. We're going to expand it a little bit here. But he talks about how democracy has largely become an illusion. And that puts us, unfortunately, you and me, at a little bit of a crossroads in the sense that, okay, how much allegiance do I give to an illusion? Rosenberg says the events of the past 2 years have come in so fast and so hot that I think most people haven't yet digested them. Human psychology doesn't incorporate new and difficult changes very well. It tends to rather pretend that everything will come back to normal, for sure, any minute now. But he says this gap between perception and acceptance makes us vulnerable. And so it's massively in our interest to narrow that gap and close it. So very briefly, he says, I'm going to try to help that process along. Paul Rosenberg says, however much hold democracy has had in the past, it clearly hasn't held over the past 2 years. Our daily lives are ordered by edicts, not democratic processes. National, state, and local potentates have locked down their populations, demanded them to cover their faces, and ordered them to accept untested and sometimes dangerous medical treatments. They've forbidden alternative treatments. They've sent policemen to break up religious gatherings. And we've watched all these things day by day for almost 2 years. Now, this was not done by votes in legislatures. It was done by executive orders without checks or balances. Now, we can describe that as either dictatorial or tyrannical, but we cannot call it democratic. It simply is not. And even if we believe that democracy will return after the crisis is over, there will always be another crisis, and ignoring democracy will be easy from here on. Politicians will rhapsodize on the virtues of rule by edict when it's necessary, and will be eager to enjoy that power again. However solid democracy was or wasn't in the past, his point is it's clearly just an illusion now. In the United States, rights were things that the government could not take away, save by criminal due process. Not only was this specifically stated, but it was stated in the supreme law of the land. That meant nothing. No subsequent law, no ruling, no executive order, no anything could challenge these rights. Period. And yet, bodily autonomy has been proudly trashed. Mass firings have been publicly ordered and backed by tremendous penalties. Even forbidding medical care, regardless that it will result in death, is openly lauded and implemented. Unless you have the jab. There is no honest way to sugarcoat such things, he says. Rights are now subject to non-democratic edicts. These are facts. No amount of clever justifications or pithy slogans will make them anything less, and whether or not we face them, he says, posterity will. Sorry, that's kind of a spoonful of reality, right? No sugar to help make it a little more palatable, but definitely still something worth thinking about. And it's bad enough when government officials, you know, chose to shut down large sectors of the economy and to deem certain individuals and businesses as unessential. But by doubling down on that earlier mistake and further restricting people's civil rights, Robert E. Wright from the American Institute for Economic Research says, these authorities are sowing the seeds for revolution. I want to share a couple of excerpts from a recent essay that he had published over the weekend. I'm sorry, this was not published over the weekend. This was published March 19th of 2020. Sorry, I needed to check that date. I just found it this weekend. It was republished on the AIER.org website. He says, before the COVID-19 panic struck in March 2020, many Americans were already disgruntled with major institutions and leaders, from POTUS to SCOTUS and Congress to the value of college and health care. And while few could articulate the problems with the nation's health care, higher education, or retirement policies, many sensed they were being expropriated. Some were beginning to think seriously about secession. A few began to chronicle the long train of abuses and usurpations needed to justify a Lockean revolution. But he says most Americans, though, were fat, literally, and happy in the sense of being prosperous, easily distracted by the modern circuses called sports. While palpably imperfect, life was good, or at least good enough to remain peaceful. Widely available alcohol, marijuana, opiates, and happy pills acted much like Soma in Brave New World. While Twitter and Facebook allowed millions to vent in ways that made them feel, if not important, at least heard by some small fraction of the herd. But in mid-March 2020, government fiat and private panic stripped away much of that status quo antivirus. Collegiate basketball March Madness gave way to a pernicious March Madness devoid of beloved and distracting sports and associated gambling, which, if nothing else, provided the hope of instant riches. He says the same misunderstanding of elementary statistics now has many fearful of early death. Due to dramatic declines in the stock market, Americans no longer feel very wealthy or fret about future income. And they fret about future income. After enjoying extended spring breaks, most college students find themselves thrust into sterile online classes that provide little of the social or intellectual stimulation they crave. Seniors wonder if standing job offers will be honored, how they'll repay their student loans if they're not. Many of their parents also wonder if they'll have jobs much longer. They rely on chemical substances, prescribed or not. Or those reliant on chemical substances wonder if they will be able to resupply. Thankfully, the internet fills many of those cracks in the old edifice, he says, but many knowledge workers can maintain and even increase their productivity by working from home. Streaming services provide numerous distractions and diversions, and as long as production and delivery services continue, food and supplies can be ordered online. Moreover, social media platforms find themselves enlivened by people who usually have better things to do. If internet and essential services like electricity, water, and payments remain up, and restrictions on civil liberties like travel bans, shelter-in-place orders, etc., soon end, the spread of the virus, he says Americans will have simply moved a small step closer towards revolution. Watergate and Vietnam will fade from collective memory, replaced by memories of the failures of 9/11, the Iraq and Afghanistan occupations, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, the financial panic of 2008, the Obamacare rollout fiasco, and the botched early reaction to COVID-19. Calls for a multitude of reforms will ring out left and right, but he says aside from some administrative and budget reshuffling, little of structural consequence will likely occur, and the nation's fate will rest on the timing and nature of its next crisis. Now, Robert E. Wright says, if government responses to the pandemic remain in place but fail to stop its spread, pre-existing doubts about the efficacy of major institutions could burgeon into a crisis of legitimacy. Dissent would start on the internet, but if it goes down due to cyber virus, censorship, or other causes, its absence would foment acts of civil disobedience because, frankly, there would be few other ways for people to vent their anger or fill their long, lonely hours. Loss of electrical, fuel, food, or water services would compound anger with fear. Then you'd see traditional street demonstrations spread the virus rapidly, achieving spontaneous herd immunity at the cost of overtaxing a healthcare infrastructure weakened by decades of cons, certificates of need, and other barriers to entry. He goes on to talk about the different phases that would kick in. Now, the bottom line here, I'm just going to skip ahead. He says, if travel and commercial restrictions don't stop the rapid spread of the disease, and keep in mind this was written back in March of 2020, at some point sooner than later, the government needs to own that fact, restore civil liberties, admit that it failed to provide one of the few clear public goods entrusted to it by all, like an ample supply of accurate tests, and suffer the political consequences from rising or perhaps even more damaging, not rising, death tolls. But he says, compounding one mistake, allowing mission creep to divert resources away from the government's presumed health mandate, with another, unduly restricting civil liberties in a desperate attempt to make up for the first failure, is a recipe for revolution. Now, he doesn't say that lightly. He says that's a putrid dish that nobody wants, but like COVID itself, we might get served anyway. Just for the record, I'm not calling for revolution. But like the fog appears when the conditions are right, I think revolution appears when the conditions are right. And I'm just sounding a warning along with others here. The conditions are looking pretty right. Let's be careful.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.